Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome into the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show, coming to you on a Tuesday night. Hanging out with you for the full four. Streaming online at 929thegame.com. Catch us live, replays of all the shows. New and improved website, 929thegame.com. Download your radio.com app. Put that on one of your devices. That way you can catch us on the go with a cool new listen back in real time feature. All the social media for the stations at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow us there. The best way to keep up with this particular show is through my personal Twitter handle. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. Jarvis still on vacation. Man, must be nice. He's like on a sabbatical, I think. He'll be back with me on Thursday. But behind the glass again tonight, Jahi hanging out with us. So lots to get into tonight. Lots of Hawks news, both developments on the court as to who's healthy, who's not healthy. Trae Young and him being a part of All-Star Weekend, besides being one of the starters, he's going to be in the three-point contest. And lots of trade rumors, so we will talk to Sarah Spencer. She is the beat writer for the Atlanta Hawks for the AJC, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We'll talk to her about all the goings-on around this Hawks team. Lots to get into tonight. I definitely want to start, first chance to kind of talk about the Super Bowl and what happened. Gosh, let's see, Kyle Shanahan with poor coaching decisions and, poor clock management and not running the football. Gee, I wonder where he learned all that from. Huh. What's the old saying? It's a chip off the old block, and I don't mean his old man. I mean his former head coach that he was working under right before he took that 49ers job. So, listen, I said it all week last week. I absolutely positively didn't want the 49ers to win. Hashtag ABS, anybody but Shanahan. Now, I don't have a problem with Tevin Coleman, Ben Garland, and Mike Person and guys like that, winning a Super Bowl. That part doesn't bother me. Players come and go, and, that's just part of the gig. But the idea of Kyle Shanahan turning that franchise around, if you will, along with John Lynch and them winning a Super Bowl this quickly after getting things on track. I wasn't into all of that. So I take glee in the fact that, and especially, blowing another lead and Kansas City coming back and, questionable clock management and calls at the end of the first half. And then obviously, the call of the pass play, which I'm sure 20 years from now he'll still be saying that, he didn't like the narrative of running the football, even though, twice now he decided not to run the football when he should have, and it kind of ended up costing him. So yeah, I take joy in the fact that they did not win, and, and not that I'm emotionally attached to Kansas City per se. I'm glad to see Andy Reid get a Super Bowl. There's no doubt about it now, I will tell you this, and we talked about this, a few weeks ago. I think it was with Jeremy Fowler that we talked this about. But it might have been Eric Edholm, actually, even one of those guys, NFL guys we talked to. But there is no doubt in my mind, if you put every player, if you're starting a brand-new franchise, okay, and every player currently in the NFL goes into a draft, okay, every team has to start over with a brand-new roster, I can't imagine who's not picking Pat Mahomes number one. I can't imagine. We're not talking fantasy, okay? We're not talking fantasy stats and all that gobbledygook and stuff like that. We're talking about real live football. I can't imagine that if you're starting a franchise from scratch and you have every available NFL player. Don't tell me Tom Brady. Don't tell me Drew Brees. It's not a matter of that Mahomes is better, had a better career than those guys. But when we're talking about right now and building your franchise for the future, there is nobody, nobody in the NFL more than Pat Mahomes. There's nobody you'd pick over him. No, not Khalil Mack, not Aaron Donald, nobody. Because you have to get quarterback figured out. You have to figure that out first and foremost in the NFL, and you don't take anybody. You know, and that's, again, that's, it's not that Tom Brady hasn't had a better career and all that. Just when you talk about right now today and you had to start your NFL franchise, he's the number one pick. I can't even imagine who somebody would pick. I can't even imagine a general manager would look and say that they'd pick anybody over him. Anybody, any quarterback, any position on the field other than Pat Mahomes. What he's done in the first 2 years, and obviously he's got a, you know, he's got a terrific coach, no doubt about it. Andy Reid sealed his legacy the other night. You know, we debated about whether or not Andy Reid, Hugh and I were talking about this on Saturday, about whether or not if Andy Reid doesn't win the Super Bowl, you know, is he still a Hall of Fame coach? I said no. I mean, there's a lot of great winning, innovative coaches during the regular season in the NFL. Understand that he got to 2 Super Bowls. Tom Flores won 2 Super Bowls and has barely been able to try to get into the Hall of Fame. Now, Don Coryell is one of the most revolutionary offensive minds in the history of the NFL. He's not gotten in. You know, I mean, think about Jimmy Johnson and guys like that that are finally, you know, Jimmy Johnson finally getting into the Hall of Fame. Well, you know, he didn't coach there very long. Who cares? He won 2 Super Bowls and handed Barry Switzer a Super Bowl team. Think if Jimmy Johnson was coaching that Dallas Cowboys team, that he couldn't have won a Super Bowl like Barry Switzer did? He'd have every bit been a 3-time Super Bowl champion. So I don't think Andy Reid was in the Hall of Fame without this. But now there's no question about it. Andy Reid is going in the Hall of Fame. Now he's got the resume, multiple Super Bowls with different teams, and a Super Bowl championship. And, you know, fair or unfair, Hugh and I talked about this on Saturday. Fair or unfair, when you talk about coaches and quarterbacks, it's all about winning. It's all about winning. You know, running backs and wide receivers and things like that, you can stack up stats and Pro Bowls and all pros and different things like that. But you can't argue winning when it comes to quarterback and head coaching. You know, Andy Reid without a Super Bowl isn't even in the discussion of Belichick, Bill Walsh, Joe Gibbs, Bill Parcells, Tom Landry, Chuck Knoll, right? He's not even in that discussion. You have to win titles, at least one, to even get considered. Vince Lombardi, you know, you have to win titles. Same thing with the quarterback position. Fair or unfair, nobody remembers how many passing yards Terry Bradshaw had. They remember he's got 4 Super Bowls. It's different. You know, baseball is a different sport. We all know, everybody knows, Hank Aaron hit 755 home runs. You know, Ted Williams, you know, hit 406 in 1941. Everybody knows numbers when it comes to baseball because it is a numbers-driven game. But football's different, man. Football's about, you know, championships, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's about winning that hardware. And you can't deny how great Pat Mahomes has been. He's not been good. He's been great in his two or three-year run, whatever it is here. In the NFL. He's been absolutely magnificent in the league. So, you know, congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. They're already the betting favorites to win it again next year, which is not surprising. I mean, at this point of the season, you know, obviously a lot can change. And truthfully, the quickest, easiest reason that they're the number one betting favorite is because nobody's 100% sure what Tom Brady's going to do. You want to talk about a player in the NFL who moves the betting line of over-under for number of wins on an NFL team. I don't know what the early line says about the New England Patriots and their over-under win total, but imagine what that number is and imagine Tom Brady leaving and what that number is. Well, they won 10 games in Matt Castle. They ain't going to do that again. I can tell you. I mean, and Belichick's the best. I think Belichick is still the best coach in the history of the league to be able to do what he's done in the salary cap era and everything else. And you know, having his quarterback and the tandem of those two guys together, you know, was unlike anything we'll ever see. You know, people talk about the Braves run of all those division titles and things like that. What the Patriots did for all these years, not just winning their division, but the conference championship games and the Super Bowl appearances. Just remarkable. And I understand. I mean, they've lost, you know, in the Super Bowl as well. They've lost, you know, three times in the Super Bowl. You know, that's, but still, I mean, it's such a tough road to get there in the NFL year over year over year when teams draft really high to be better, when teams got lots of money to spend to get better. And the salary cap era to be able to do what they did have done is incredible. So glad that Kyle Shanahan lost. Can't say I didn't shed any tears, you know, for them. Glad to see them go down, especially, you know, when you look at all the stats and stuff like that. You know, I think he's been, I think Kyle Shanahan, I think the stat I saw, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's, he's been part of two of the three biggest blown leads in Super Bowl history or something like that. I think that's the stat that I saw, two of the three biggest blown leads, you know, given score and time left in the game. He's got two of the three. Now, of course, one came at our expense here as Falcon fans in Atlanta, but that's not completely on Kyle Shanahan. There's that guy that's still head coaching up there that with the initials DQ, that he gets some of that as well. Because that dumb stat that's out there about, you know, scoring in the fourth quarter and this, that, and the other. Okay, I can assure you Bill Parcells, he wouldn't have had to worry about that stat because Bill Parcells would have never let him throw it. Bill Parcells would have made him run the football. They'd have kicked the field goal, had the point lead to win the game and run off the clock. There'd have been no worries about that kind of stat because they'd have had the Super Bowl championship. But, alas, we don't. And now here we go into the offseason, and we're still searching, and we're still chasing the dream here in Atlanta. So lots into tonight. When we get back, looks like we might not have 44 to kick around anymore. So now what direction do the Falcons go? We've been talking a little bit about this. Let's get into it more. Chuck Reed, Nakia Studios on Tuesday night with you. Sports Radio, 92 in the game. Sports Radio, 92.9 the game. Back in the Nakia Studios. Tuesday night with Chuck Reed here. Hanging out with you. 404-741-0929. That is the phone line. That is also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Feel free to interact with us, as folks have already started doing. Don't forget, follow me on social media. It's at JMCH316, at JMCH316. By the way, that is all your water cooler talking points, 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. So in a statement released by the Atlanta Falcons, they have said that they will not be pursuing active contract negotiations with a soon-to-be, I guess, maybe officially, free agent defensive end in number 44, Vic Beasley. We can use his name now because it doesn't look like he's going to be an Atlanta Falcon anytime soon. This is not really a surprise, obviously, given what we've seen out of Vic Beasley. Well, he had 8 sacks. Yeah, I know. And he did all of his damage basically when the Falcons were completely eliminated from playoff action and, you know, weren't there to contend at all. You know, and I said it was – you know, it's amazing when it comes, you know, it's coming contract time very quickly about all of a sudden guys find another motor to turn up and go get it done. The Falcons needed his 8 sacks more in that 1-7 start than anything else. But nonetheless, so the end of an era, it looks like. Now, I've said I would not be opposed to bringing back Vic Beasley if he was on like a short-term deal for low money. And I think the Falcons understand that. Even a guy with 8 sacks that has the rep that he has is still going to get paid in today's league. Why? Because everybody's so desperate, including this franchise we're looking at right here, to sack the quarterback. Everybody's desperate to find a quarterback and sack the quarterback. Just those two things in the NFL drive all the decision-making about what your franchise is and wants to be. So somebody is going to get Vic Beasley. I don't think he's done playing in the NFL. Somebody will overpay him with the idea of, well, we can coach him up. You know, and I always talk about the Peter King theory. Peter King knows way more about going around the NFL than I'll ever know and understand. But I know more than Peter King about the Atlanta Falcons because I watch him and read about him and you know, we cover him day after day after day after day. It's all we cover. So I've got a better grasp of what Vic Beasley does day in, day out, game in, game out. I've watched every play of Vic Beasley play in the NFL. So we have a better grasp in Atlanta about our own. And I just don't think when you watch Vic Beasley that I think he's got skill. I don't know. I don't think he's developed. I don't think that he's broadened his arsenal, if you will. So the end of an era, you know, it looks like it's going to come to a close. And now the question is, what do the Falcons do? Now, it's kind of funny because we talked a few weeks ago, and I know I think John and Hugh played a clip this morning from the interview we did about a week or so ago with the Orlando Ledbetter, when I asked him about trading up for Chase Young. And people got a very interesting reaction on Twitter from everybody about all of that. Some for it, a lot of people not for it. And I get it. I understand. It's going to cost, you know, a lot. But to me, the Falcons, you know, and this is what I keep trying to tell folks, Falcons aren't so far away from, you know, getting to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl. I mean, the Falcons, you look 3 years ago, I guess it was, what, three seasons ago, you know, in the Super Bowl, playoffs, you know, a divisional round the following year, you know, then fell off the last, you know, couple of years. But from a talent standpoint, they don't have to take a backseat to anybody. When you talk about quarterback and skill positions, they don't have to take a backseat to anybody. Offensive line should naturally be better, and we'll talk a little bit later on tonight in the Falcon flyover what Arthur Blank had to say about the draft. But I don't think the Falcons are so many holes and spots away from getting to the Super Bowl. You know, every team has their flaws. Remember, the Kansas City Chiefs lost one of their best pass rushers in Dee Ford from the previous year. You know, guys come and go in the league. Guys give you good results, and they move on. That's the league, man. You know, the trick is going to find that next guy. Now, we talked about the available pass rushers in free agency, and it's a lot of guys that, frankly, aren't on the youthful side, which is not surprising because no team is going to let a dominant pass rusher leave their franchise in the dead red prime of their career unless they just absolutely have to. You know, for that position, that skill, you know, you play, you know, if you've got a guy, let's say he's not a first round pick, but he balls out, you know, you franchise him and franchise him again if you have to try to figure out a good deal. You keep him around as long as you can. Because that's a premium position that you know at some point you're going to have to pay for. So my personal feeling is that the Falcons probably need to look more in the draft for their pass rush. I mean, unless you tell me that Jadeveon Clowney, you know, Robert Quinn or guys like that paired with Tack McKinley can get something done. And we've talked a lot on the show about this is make or break to me for Tack McKinley. I do think the Falcons will pick up his fifth-year option because there's nothing really to lose with all of that. You can still cut him before he plays. You know, you can still cut him before that money all becomes guaranteed in the fifth year. I don't think it hurts at all. I think it's worth a roll of the dice to pick up his fifth year option. Then you see what he does this year, and then you decide whether or not you want him to be around. I don't think they'll make the same mistake twice like they did with Vic Beasley and say, okay, we're willing to give Vic Beasley $13.5 million for, you know, not a lot of production when the games really matter the most to this franchise. So I think the draft is going to be more of the way to go, which means, you know, you're going to have to go very early to go find, you know, a pass rusher. You know, some people like the kid out of South Carolina, Kinlaw. You know, obviously Chase Young is the number one guy. What is it, the kid out of Penn State, kid out of Iowa. You know, there's some guys available. I just feel like if there's ever a year and a franchise where it makes sense to roll the dice, this would be it. This would be it. Roll the dice and see what happens. Try to sign some of your free agents and roll the dice. And yeah, I mean, you're going to feel some of the pain, but that's part of it. If you want elite players on your roster, you're going to have to feel some pain for it. We talk about this with the Braves trades. If you want Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado, you got to feel some pain. You can't just give what you want to give and somebody's just going to arbitrarily accept it. You're probably going to have to be on the pain side of what you give away to get that. And I understand draft picks in the NFL, it's all about potential. I get that. I understand that completely, right? That's the fear about drafting a guy in the NFL is the unknown potential. But to me, there's just, I don't know, I look at the landscape of some of the pass rushers that you see out there, and I just don't think there's a great group of guys. I just don't think that there's enough difference makers in free agency to put the Falcons into Super Bowl contention. I think I'd rather roll the dice on one of the younger guys and let that guy do what they do best and go sack the quarterback for it. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. Dwight out in Atlanta. What's going on, Dwight?
Hey, what's up, Chuck?
What's going on, man?
With you always, man. With you every night. And I agree with you saying. My thoughts are this. You help me out. I'm just a fan. I just watch and I just listen to the game. But my thing with the Falcons is it seems to be more on coaching than it is on playing, because we had a sack master like a Dwight Freeney in our midst. Why didn't they bring Dwight Freeney back? There's nothing else but to train players like Vic and Tack, because these are like one-trick ponies. All they can do is speed rush. They don't do nothing else. No bull rush, no spin move, nothing. So I feel like it's just like kind of like wasted talent with that. We had done Terry Poe here. How did we let him get away? At least there was some balance
on
the line.
Here's the thing, Dwight, and I appreciate the phone call. And you guys are going to like the answer to this, okay? You can't just give guys a roster spot for sentimental sake and hope that they can coach. If you want Dwight Freeney to be a coach, hire him as a coach. Bill Parcells is the first guy to tell you, you know, when I've got a 53-man roster, if I can upgrade spot number 51, I upgrade it. I don't have sentimental value. I upgrade that spot. I don't care if it's my long snapper. I don't care if it's a gunner on punt returns. If I can upgrade, I upgrade. And the reality is that Dwight Freeney as a player wasn't enough value to give him veteran money and to keep him around. I don't have a problem so much with that. You want Dwight Freeney to come on and be a you know, coaching consultant or what have you? Fine. But you can't just give up a roster spot to guys for, you know, the idea of mentorship and things like that. Every roster spot has to matter and has to be a contributor to it. And in that league, it does. With salary cap and everything else, every guy you bring on there has to have a role and has to be able to produce something for them. Now, I understand you bring guys in and guys don't produce, but you don't bring them in for sentimental reasons. And I understand everybody goes back, you know, to that. Listen, I mean, the Falcons were a different team, you know, in 2016. They were, you know, and also too, let's not forget this, you know, guys on that side of the football, you know, on the other team, they get paid too. The guys get paid to figure out how to block and stop Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley. The question is, can those guys adjust? Can your guys adjust to what other teams are going to do to you, whatever that is? You know, there are very few players in the history of the league that nobody could adjust to. Nobody could adjust to Lawrence Taylor. Nobody was able to ever figure out the trick to Lawrence Taylor. And I remember talking to Hugh. We were talking about Eric Williams of the Cowboys. You know, Eric Williams of the Cowboys, maybe one of the few guys to ever at least go up and sort of compete against Reggie White. There were very few guys in the history of the NFL that slowed down Reggie White. Even fewer that slowed down Lawrence Taylor. So, guys on the other teams, they get paid too to how to figure out how to stop these guys. All right, only about a week away from spring training. Three concerns for the Braves as we head that direction. It's John Chuck. We're here in the Kia Studios. We'll be back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back in the Kia Studios. It's the John Chuck. We're show hanging out with you till 11 o'clock tonight. 404-741-0929, that's our phone line, plus our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact with us. Follow us on social media, stations at 929 The Game. I'm at JMCH316, and to my right is our Braves reporter, Joe Patrick, at JAPatrick200. I let Joe hang around. Well, two things. We'll talk news girls, but also, more importantly, I had my three top concerns for the Braves as we head towards spring training. I'm actually going to make a fourth one on this as well. But let me give you my 3, 4, and I'll let you.
I know you've got 5 or 6 rambling around in your brain right now.
Yeah.
But.
You know, and if we're playing who's the a-hole, I'll go ahead and take the award for it right now. Because number one is, what is my manager going to give me when it comes playoff time? That's my number one concern about this franchise is, what do I get out of the guy in the dugout when it comes time to make the decisions on rotation and substitutions and things like that? What am I going to get out of him? So that's first and foremost. Because, again, I'm not, well, we got to win the division. Okay. They're still the favorite to win the division. Still the betting favorite.
Are they? Yeah, are they the betting favorite to win the division?
Only the Dodgers are a higher win total in Vegas right now than the Braves. The Braves are 91.5 on the win totals is the Vegas betting line, which is only the Dodgers have a higher one. Oh, Dodgers may be in the Mookie Betts business. Oh, so they're going to – okay. Let me get me started. Second thing, enough protection for Freddie Freeman. And I understand you guys are going to tell me, well, they signed Marcell Ozuna. That ain't the same thing, guys. I mean, that he's a nice player. But a guy who strikes out a good bit and doesn't get on base doesn't really protect Freddie Freeman, Joe.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we talked about this. I may have been in studio the day that he was signed, the night that he was signed, and we kind of talked about it a little bit. I thought that you made a great point talking about we need to keep tabs on Freddie Freeman's walk count during the season.
Two things to watch. His home run total, I think, sorry, I'm fighting a cold. I think his home run total goes down. I think his walk total goes up this year. I think that's two numbers to watch with Freddie Freeman is how many times he gets pitched around. Because I understand, when Ozuna makes contact, it goes a long way. But say what you will about Donaldson, but you know Donaldson out-homered him, out-on-based him, out-walked him. And part of that, I understand, he hit second and he hit fourth and all that kind of stuff. But Ozuna is... You know, a lot of ways, I don't want to say he's all or nothing, but he's got some of that in him. He's not been the same guy since he left the Marlins, you know, two seasons ago.
Right. He's definitely a certain type of player, and I agree with you that I like him. He's a decent player for what he is, but he's not Josh Donaldson. He's not really what I would consider a bona fide cleanup hitter on a team that has championship.
He's better because they don't have anybody.
Right.
I mean, that's why. I mean, if they did go get Arenado and Bryant or somebody like that, or Betts or whatever, okay, now I've got somebody legitimate that I can move around with out of all of it.
And it's clear from what the Braves brass are saying that they are expecting him to outperform what he's done these last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see if that rings true.
I've also got bench depth. I think that's been a strength of the Braves the last few years. Braves did sign Yonder Alonso. I mean, we throw these guys out there and all this kind of stuff. I know they've, you know, Charlie Culberson will at least get a minor league deal where he'll come in. But, you know, they've had a pretty good bench. Hechavarria is going to be back, so that's, I think, good. I don't know. I'm curious to see what their bench depth is going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a shakeup, and I think Culberson's position in the team. I mean, maybe because they're going to these 26-man rosters, that still probably gives him a spot. But I would be curious if they were still in the 25-man rosters, if he might get squeezed out by a guy like Echeverria. Because during the last season, his defense was really a sticking point when he was out there. By the end of the season, you could not put him in the infield.
And what's the rule? There is a pitcher limit. So if you have 12 or 13 pitchers, that's all you can have, too.
Yeah.
It has to be a positional player. And then finally, who wants to be the legitimate number three starter? Because the 2 second-year guys are going to get the one and two. In my book, they get the number one and two spot. Now, maybe come playoff time, you know, they'll find a bulldog to pitch, you know, 4 times in the playoffs or whatever. But as of right now, you know, who wants to claim it? Well, you know, they got Fulton. Okay. They got Newcomb. Okay. They got Cole Hammer. Okay. I don't know that any of those guys right now tell me that, you know, I can trust them to be that. You know, in today's world, you know, when you talk about the best teams in the majors, think about the guys who are the third pitcher on some of the best staffs in baseball. You know, Zach Greinke's the number three for the Astros, okay? Walker Buehler was the number three for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the kind of guys you're talking about that on championship-caliber teams. That's the kinds of guys that go out there. We don't have anybody like that. I mean, we might not have that guy at number two, let alone at number three.
Yeah, it really showed up in the playoffs. And the Braves' rotation was pretty solid throughout from one to five. There wasn't a huge weakness at that, you know, throughout that group. But then it really manifested itself in the playoffs where you had a three that was not really, didn't really stack up with a lot of the threes you were
going
against.
Well, the guy we pitched one wasn't exactly that either.
Yeah,
but your manager decided that hey, listen, the two guys that went 30-10, let's give them one start. The two guys that were 16-14, now let's give them three starts. Four starts because they played five games. Those two guys got four starts. I mean, so I'm curious if somebody steps up. Newcomb, Fulte, one of the minor leaguers, Cole Hamels, you know, are those guys. And, you know, in today's baseball world, you know, a third starter's supposed to be 150, 160 innings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a guy that just gets whacked around and stuff like that. And again, when you're talking about what the Braves are, if the Braves were in rebuild mode, a third starter doesn't mean a whole lot. But this is a World Series team that third starter is going to matter, because five-game, seven-game series, that guy's going to get starts. You know, and that guy is going to be expected that they've had a pretty good run. So I don't know. I mean,
I think in a perfect world that three would be Soroka, Fried, and Fulte. I mean, I think that people, obviously that last game, that game five, that Fulte pitch when they had the 10-run first inning, that is what is seared in everybody's minds. But his back half of the season last year was really, really, really good, like among the best in baseball.
Why would I ever trust Mike Fultonevich again? I keep asking this question.
Well, hope you catch that fire in a barrel. Okay. You know, you hope you catch that lightning in a bottle.
How long you been around here?
Yeah, a long time.
I've watched every pitch of his career, too. I mean, you know, he was what, traded from the Padres in one of those deals. Was that the Upton-Kimbrell deal that he was traded for?
I don't remember.
One of those deals
that they
picked him up. But I understand.
I totally get the reservations.
Yeah, and I understand your point. He's got the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not here.
Mm-hmm.
It's here. You know, and I'm pointing to my arm saying it's not here. I'm pointing to my head and saying it's here. Because when you put him in high leverage spots and the spotlight gets on him, it hasn't happened for him. And he's had nice moments. You know, when you're talking about, well, a good first half a couple of years ago and he got in the All-Star game. Well, a good back half last year. Okay, that's not consistent, though. You know, a good first half and a bad second half and a bad first half and a good second half doesn't equal itself out to being that's good.
I get you. I would say that, though, he pitched a magnificent game in game two of that series when the Braves blew game mm-hmm. one that they should have won. And then you're going up against Jack Flaherty in game two, who had won back-to-back NL Pitcher of the Month. So the cards were really, the deck was stacked against the Braves at that point, and Fultonevich went out and threw eight shutout innings, probably his best outing
career. You think Flaherty's really that much better than Mike Fultonevich, in all due respect? I mean, what's Flaherty done? I mean, Flaherty's had good moments. What's he done that he should, that tells me he's got any better stuff than Mike Fultonevich?
Well, my point is just that Mike Fultonevich came up really big in that spot when the Braves needed him.
I agree.
So,
but that's what he's supposed to have been, though.
Sure.
I mean, had he been healthy, he was the opening day pitcher for the Braves.
Yeah, he was.
You know, but injuries and everything else derailed him. So it's not like Mike Fultonevich has been looked at as, you know, a can of corn or a ham and egg or a humanoid
mm-hmm.
or fish heads and rice. You know, I mean, I got them all, you know, working, you know, over here. He's supposed to be one of those guys. All right, Joe. Do you like my list?
That was good talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't yell at me too much.
No. I'll do that later when we talk in the bullpen about the news girls. All right, when we get back, Michigan State is looking for a new football coach. This kind of came out of left field after a $4 million bonus got thrown his way. We'll talk about that next. Chuck Reed in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 910 The Game.